Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to hack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Monday, April 26, 2021, and yes, we are streaming on YouTube on the main channel. We will address that first so people understand what's been going on. And for those that are shocked, just like Corbett always points out, where did he go? What's been happening? How is this going on? You would know all of this if you've been following on all the other platforms this whole time that we haven't been on the main channel. Right. And if you wanted to know what was going on, ask yourself why you didn't choose to go look at where else we were and you stayed on YouTube. Right. Not to be a criticism, but just to reflect on why it is that we choose to stay with the platforms we know are the problem. We all do it. Right. I mean, we understand it's everybody does this. Now, we're going to talk about a lot today. I don't actually think this is going to be an incredibly long show, but there's a lot of information to go over here, and it's going to be entirely around the vaccine discussion. We two very, very important interviews were conducted by Taylor Hudak on The Last American Vagabond in regard to the vaccine discussion, COVID-19 generally, but specifically the vaccine discussion around the concept of blood clots. Is the point that I'm talking about today. This was the main point that I felt was really relevant in both of these, both with Dr. Michael Yeadon, as well as Dr. Sutrik Bhakti. I might be mispronouncing his first name. Very important stuff, where they both come to the conclusion in their opinions, their expert opinions, that based on the science, it's quite clear that all of these COVID vaccines are equally dangerous because of the spike protein. And we're going to get into this today. We're going to talk about why. We're going to talk about the science and what it shows. And then for even the one person that was already calling this out in the beginning, oh my God, I can't believe you guys are still listening to this guy. These vaccines are so safe. There was already a comment like that in the chat. I hope those people will stick through. And I hope they will finally begin to understand what it feels like to actually look at the science and actually read the science and walk away going, okay, if this is what the science says, how can we trust the science when they're saying something completely different than what the science is saying? It's very interesting. But we're going to go over that. We're going to go over some information around an individual who worked for a vaccine company, who died, who has an interesting illness, I guess, they say he had a specific illness that's very rare. But I find it interesting when you tie in these conversations together, as well as the fact that you find out that this issue that he had, we'll get to it in the show, is also interestingly tied to the vaccine in another way. All of it tying back to the same kind of experimental situation we're dealing with. It's being caused by the experiments that are being conducted on us today. And that's that. And even for those right now that are thinking, no, this is not experimental. He's conspiracy theorists. No, it's not. These are all approved. And you know, we'll get to that right in the beginning because we know that's going to be there. But I wanted to start off today to just quickly tell people that are right now on YouTube that haven't seen us on YouTube since the last time YouTube decided to arbitrarily remove us based on the science we were showing on the channel. I did not ask for this channel back. I did not petition them in any way. I didn't even appeal what they did because they didn't even give me an option to, right? It was clear that they did not want me to find some kind of process. They wanted me gone. They deleted me across multiple platforms. Since that time, I've been deleted on Spotify, on LinkedIn. I've been deleted on another platform I'm forgetting right now, but I mean, this is constant, you understand. These are being knocked off left and right. Now, why the YouTube decided to give this channel back for some random reason, I don't know. But if you take a quick peek at the main channel itself, if you take a look at, I might as well just show you real quick. If you take a look at the main channel that has been put back up, and you'll notice something. You'll notice that I changed the banner to make sure it was clear that what we were talking about was not my channel anymore. This is not my channel. It's been censored and sanitized by YouTube. They deleted probably 50% of the content and just decided to put it back up for some reason. Now, when I went in to try to use this originally, I couldn't live stream. I couldn't upload. I couldn't make playlists. I couldn't do anything. None of that was explained to me. And they gave it back and said, hey, we made a mistake. And I talked about that on a different platform, on somebody else's channel. And then the next day I got probably 20 different strikes for no reason, and none of them affected the channel. So God knows what they're trying to accomplish with this. But I want people to understand, this is not my channel anymore. I'm not going to use this channel outside of, like I already am with my pilots, my T-Lav pirate streams, which I've been doing. I'll explain that next for those that don't know. I'm going to continue to use this channel like any one of the other ones I've been using to punch this onto YouTube, which they'll probably delete today. Maybe this will get the channel deleted today. I don't care, because we are launching a new platform that's coming out likely today or tomorrow. And then we have all the other platforms we've been using. It's not about YouTube. It's important that you out there watching do not allow YouTube to be the conduit between our information and you, especially for those right now going, wow, he's back. That's so awesome. We were never gone. We've been doing shows every day just like this the whole time. You just didn't know it was there, right? So when you look at this channel, know that I will here and there dance into this channel and use it for maybe big discussions. It'll probably get knocked off here and there eventually. But what I've been doing is called T-Lav Pirate Streams. Now, anyone out there who wants to help me do this, you can reach out, email me, ryan@lastamericanvagabond.com, and you can be a part of this, and you can let me use your channel to stream through this. I have about 30 people right now that have been letting me use their channels to stream onto YouTube. And I put a banner up, it says T-Lav Pirate Stream and everything. It's like pirate radio, right? It's a classic counterculture iconic kind of concept that we are punching through because they don't like what we're talking about. So we're going to keep doing that. And this is just one more of my pirate channels, because the reason I think they gave this back is because they don't like what I'm doing with the pirate streams, because they can't control it. And if those that don't know what it is, I'm sure you'll find out soon. Those that know, you know what I'm talking about, because they can't control this. If I'm jumping from channel to channel every day, and you guys know what I'm doing and you're following me from channel to channel, they can't stop that. And I think that's why they were hoping I would just come full steam back into this channel that's no longer mine. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to allow YouTube to dictate my moves. That's never going to happen. And I'm sure that's bothering them just as much. But to get right into the information today, the important stuff that we're going to talk about, I'm going to discuss. Now, first of all, make sure you guys can still hear me. Don't know why that was an issue the other day. I'm just going to give it a second. Make sure you can hear me in the chat. Let me know. Now, there's a lot to get into, but I'm going to start with a couple important points. First of all, in regard to foreign policy, Roberts reporting today that Israeli cabinet just authorized an attack on Gaza. Not some response to something, but they are literally discussing and authorizing a military action against Gaza at the behest of the prime minister and the minister of war, Netanyahu. That's a crime, right? There's no equivocation. This is an occupied territory, as the UN has always maintained. This is a crime. It's a war crime. Massive deployment of Israeli forces inside the old city of Jerusalem today and surrounding the Damascus Gate now. As I said here, Robert's been telling you this was building. This is an occupied territory according to the UN, which has never faltered on that point, which would make this an act of a war crime. One in a long line of war crimes for this government. Now, I list two articles here where Robert goes over this, building up to where we are now. So you know that he has been telling you this was coming and outlining why it would happen and telling you that it was giving you all of the real details that you're not going to find in the mainstream media. But this should upset you, because this has been going on a long time, and this is taking place under even under their narrative, understand, it's taking place during the worst pandemic in the century. So why is that okay? These people are struggling already, and you're going to make it worse, because, you know, it shows you that even within their false narrative, they're doing things that are ridiculous and wrong. Now, in the same vein, in regard to the U.S. government, he wrote this today. As Yemen war intensifies, Biden set to resume weapon sales. Oh, yeah, you mean the Yemen war that he said he was going to end because he said that to get a bunch of cheers from people who thought he was the right person? Nope, same old thing, over and over and over. More war and justified by some new excuse. And it continues the worst humanitarian crisis on the planet. On the planet. Why? Because of Saudi Arabia and the United States government that are blockading this country and starving them to death. But let's all pretend like it's for freedom, right? That's what you're seeing on the right. Biden all tucked away in his safe little zone is what we're dealing with here. And we're going to resume weapon sales to continue to hurt these people. Because freedom. This is what we're dealing with, and it applies the same way in what we're talking about today around what they're doing to you. Because they do not care about whatever you want to call it, the sanctity of life, the idea of human rights, with all the things they continue to push into your face. Now, one note on censorship that brings us into the COVID discussion. Doctors for Ethics was just censored on Twitter. Not a month on Twitter, and we were locked out of our account, forced to delete our pinned tweet, which is what they're now doing, right? All these platforms, they know they're on really thin ground here. So all they do is they suspend you and then force you to delete your content. I guarantee they've worked this out with their lawyers to find some way to kind of circumvent any accountability, right? No, he did that. He did that. We just told him what he should do, right? This is classic. This is them sidestepping any responsibility because they're cowards. It's what they are. Same with Patreon, same with YouTube. They're cowards. Now it says, forced to delete or pin tweet, we must self-censor to be or be banned, says Twitter. I would recommend they just take it and get banned and say, screw Twitter, and we're going to find somewhere else. We mustn't contradict official sources, but our letters contradict official source, but our letters contradict official sources with good reason, which we can't tweet. Right? So, oh, they're saying the argument is, you know, mainstream. That's what they're saying. And they can, and they have the information. That's the point, which is what we're doing today. We're going to prove to you what they're not showing you. Trusting the science means ignoring all of this science today. And in lieu of what? Nothing, in fact. There's no counterbalance to this argument. They just don't talk about it, which means they're not trusting the science. They're ignoring the science. This is what's happening. You don't realize the people that are in this group, there's a lot of people here, but I mean, we know that there's a lot of the kind of people that we've interviewed, the Bhaktis and the Edens, and these are the people that are in groups like this, and this specifically. They are experts. But Twitter decides, apparently, right? Because Twitter, as I said here, is this what trusting the science looks like, Twitter? Doctors for COVID ethics are highly credentialed experts who have a right to speak on these matters. Far more right than you have to stand in their way. This is authoritarian censorship. But you already knew that. Cowards. Of course they do. Which brings us into the COVID-19 discussion. Just out of just randomly looked at the chat, someone saying, please start a Telegram. I did a long time ago. So please, somebody drop that Telegram in the chat for me so that guy can check it out. This is something very interesting. I've been talking about the Israeli issue here, as well as a lot of people, about the contrast between how the media represents what's going on there and then the you know, horrifying hellscape that's really happening if you talk to the people on the ground and what they're dealing with. This is from that. This is from the people, not the government trying to hide what they're actually feeling, you know, sort of like how Americans are dealing with today. The Israeli People's Committee, the Israeli People's Committee Interim Conclusion Report, April 2021. This is actually pretty interesting. It starts with a quote. I'll just read it without telling you who it is, then you'll find, and then it'll be quite interesting. Quote, I was impressed, frankly, with the obsession of your prime minister. He called me 30 times, 30 times. He would call me at 3 o'clock in the morning and he would ask me about about the variants, what data we have. And I said, prime minister, it's 3 o'clock. He said, no, don't worry. Tell me, like, because I'm under the impression that he's the one being like, it's funny. You'll see that's funny in a minute. Or he would call me to ask about children. I need to vaccinate the schools, he said, or to ask about pregnant women. So he convinced me, frankly, that we will be on top of it. That's Pfizer CEO Dr. Albert Bourla interview on Israeli TV, right? So Netanyahu was calling him all hours of the night. I thought that's funny because clearly him calling the CEO at 3 a.m. was the inconvenience, not that he's being talked to at 3 a.m, because that's how the prime minister sees himself as the world revolves around him, apparently. But here's what they actually have to say. What that quote's supposed to show you is the fact that there is a personal experimental, you know, they call it the world's lab for a reason. Right? That's what's happening there. They are conducting a massive experiment, as the CEO himself has pointed out. We're using all them to gather data on what's really going on. It's the most vaccinated place on the earth with this specific vaccine from their company. Now, here's what the people have to say about this. And I'm just going to read you the abstract, and I highly recommend you read this whole thing because it is shocking. I'm probably going to go back through this because there's some parts in here where they're just talking about the brainwashing and the manipulation coming from the meat. It's crazy. But just this. The Israeli People's Committee has uncovered a multitude of malfunctions and failures at the administrative, ethical, and legal levels during COVID-19 vaccination campaign at the beginning of 2021 in Israel. In this document, we aim at presenting and elaborating the main features of these malfunctions, which have led to severe damages in many Israelis in the short term, and sadly to possible future damages. It seems that the entire country got caught up in a medical social chaos, where the leadership has enabled a situation of fear and uncertainty to run its course out of control and even contributed to its further enhancement. But most of all, we cannot ignore severe suspicions shared by all the committee members that the fundamental sin which led to the chaos and its casualties is the way in which two very powerful personages, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Pfizer CEO Dr. Albert Bourla. I'm going to say Bourla. I'm just realizing I've never said that out loud until now. Bourla agreed upon a massive vaccination campaign in Israel that is unprecedented in scale and nature. A vaccination campaign that lacks effective safeguards for public safety, that is devoid of any concern for people who may be harmed by the vaccine, and that is allegedly guaranteed to encompass populations. Meaning, this is the point where we're talking about where Israel said, yeah, we got you. We're going to vaccinate everybody. Oh, but wait a minute. As they say, for which the safety of the vaccines has not been tested. Pregnant women and their fetuses. And later also children, for whom the need to be vaccinated is totally unclear. While pushing aside any safety considerations, from this exact episode, where both parties came to an agreement regarding the vaccination campaign, which involved a wide variety of ethical and safety violations, undeniable, by the way, this is an unapproved experimental vaccine, which I'll show you again in a moment. There's no way you can make people have to take this, which is what they're doing there. An unrestrained drama was initiated that has revealed itself to be impulsive, neglectful, and reckless. The agreed-upon vaccination campaign concerns matters of life and death, yet is being conducted in an amateurish, irresponsible, and aggressive manner. And it led to the political arena taking over the medical arena and bending it to its needs, while paralyzing all alarm systems, monitoring measures, and open scientific discussion. This is exactly what's happening in our country, too. Unfortunately, most of the medical system collaborated with this unsupervised process, starting with the higher ranks and ending with the field doctors. Some actively, some by keeping quiet from fear of reprisal. Well, what do you know? Plenty of people see this. They're not being allowed to be heard. Now, would we even hear what they have to say if they hadn't gathered and had this committee write this document, which is already being suppressed? No. So my point of this is always to show you that there's a majority out there that's not being pointed to, while the media points to a extremely vocal minority and says that's the majority. Where else do we get our perception of that majority? When you have 60% of nurses not taking a vaccine, recognize the majority, right? There's a lot of this happening today. This is alarming. And what they're telling you is exactly what's happening in this country. It's about politics, and they've taken over the science, taken over the medicine, and this is, by the way, exactly what the British Medical Journal and by the way, Health and Human Services as well, have previously stated about the CDC between the year 2000 and today. I've shown you both of them. I've gone over them in previous shows. They call out the politicization of what's happening. They call out how they use special interest groups to push vaccines. And guess what? Those people got quickly, quietly pushed aside, and then they got the right people in place. And then they went forward again. And now no one says anything. Isn't that funny? Sort of like what happened with the OPCW. Here on Israel's point, which will bring us into the discussion of the blood clots. And I want you to remember, I'm starting with this one and I'm ending with other ones, right? So this one, you won't have the previous middle information about the blood clots. So I want you to remember this as we go through that. And the last one will ring true with this as well. Israel investigating link between Pfizer vaccine and heart problems in men under 30. The Israeli Health Ministry has raised concerns that there could be a link between the Pfizer COVID vaccine and heart complications, particularly among younger men. Isn't it interesting how I keep showing you that all the side effects are predominantly hitting between 17 and 65, right? So that's the people most at risk are the people over 65. So it's funny how the vaccine seems to be predominantly hurting the people that don't need it. Interesting. There are currently 62 recorded cases in Israel of myocarditis and inflammation of the heart muscle, which occurred in days after vaccination. Now, this is what, think about the overarching discussion about the spike protein and what in multiple different vaccines, even the ones that are not mRNA, and how that can affect your body. And we're going to get into that about the inflammation aspect. So your question should be about whether this could be one of many side effects being caused by the same problem. Interesting thought. In any case, this is another clear issue that, guess what? We would have probably caught in an actual safety trial that wasn't rushed, that skipped all sorts of different parts and jammed things together, right? This is the point. As I joked the other day when somebody said, we're going to, they think it was the CDC or New York Post posted it, and I think it was, and said, they're going to start a new study regarding the anaphylaxis or the allergic reactions. Like, are you kidding me? Like, what I tweeted was, I wish we had some sort of a process to figure these things out before they were given to people. It's like, oh, we did. That's right. We just didn't do it properly. We shouldn't be doing studies inside of studies. That's because they didn't do these things properly and because they want you to think you're not currently in a study. Which brings us to the point of the experimental aspect. But first, we're going to show you what we're being seen, the reported adverse events. Now, yes, as always, these are just reported. But that's always how it's been, whether flu or anything else. It's the vaccine adverse event reporting system, VAERS. You can report these things. Now, they are taking these things at face value because understand, and I've proven this in previous shows, they do not have the resources to track down, investigate, interview, conduct autopsies with every single one of the things you're about to see here. 145,000 nervous system disorders. You really believe these people are going to 145,000 people's in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of everything else? They're simply not, even if there wasn't anything else going on, they don't have the resources to conduct these things. Do you see how long these investigations take when they're doing one of them? Show some common sense here and recognize anybody out there that they don't have the resources to actually investigate these things. So they're flat out lying to you. Anybody honest can make that clear to you, can tell you that, which I've spoken to people that will tell me that. So what we're seeing is a huge reporting system that, sure, some of them, and again, this is an important point to understand. You could look at me. It's important that we understand this point. Yes, I believe what I'm going to show you here is a very alarming situation, but we cannot ignore, let's put it this way. Exactly like they will dismiss anything that comes out after these vaccines as we don't know, can't prove it. It's just as bad for us to assume everything is part of the vaccine because that's what they want. They want to be able to point at things and look at you just using Facebook tweets that your comments or tweets that have no data, just a claim, and you're sharing them going, see, we knew it. We can't prove that. We can't prove what that person just said. Right. So the point is, we can consider these things, but we have to be careful because, yes, on the VAERS system, some of those might be fake. Some of those might be wrong. Maybe they're just natural things or people that actually died after getting the vaccine by natural causes. Yes, that's certainly possible. Somebody could get this thing and then just randomly have some kind of occurrence. Now, that's important to state. That's possible. Now, talking about all things we're going to see, bringing it back into what we're going to report here. Do I think that's what's happening here by and large? Obviously not, because this is an unbelievably, an obscenely high number. That's why we are seeing doctors reach out and write letters to the CDC going, I'm really concerned about all these things we're seeing. Like, this can't be normal. You don't hear that stuff from the mainstream media because they don't want you to, right? This is from the Daily Exposé breaking the COVID vaccines. And by the way, guys, you can verify this stuff. I mean, I'm going to show you one thing on the VAERS system. Look this stuff up for yourself. Now, well, I should also add, too, that remember that these things are not all verified, right? Because some of them could be wrong. But remember that even then, the CDC it was Harvard and the HA and the Health and Human Services did their study. And I've showed you this in a past show. I can find the link and remember to include it. They themselves tell you that what's reported is only 1%. 1%. As I understand it from the UK, they gauge that somewhere between 10 and below. In any case, it's the same concept that you're getting a fraction of the real report, even if some of them aren't real. Okay, so going into that, COVID-19 vaccines are so safe that this is how they're framing it, and I agree with this. They're so safe and effective that there have been just 691,429 adverse reactions, including 9,125 blood disorders, 16,282 ear and eye disorders, and a shocking 145,806 nervous system disorders, which include brain damage, seizure, and stroke. Now, you know, just a small little occurrence, you know, nothing to sneeze at, right? Architects for Social Housing had to run this stuff down. And yes, I have looked at this stuff myself. As of 14th of April, 40.9 million doses of experimental gene-based vaccines have been injected into the UK public. This is in the UK. This has resulted in 196,576 reports of 692,162 adverse reactions, including 961 deaths shortly after injection. Remember, in India, I was just reporting this. I have a quick follow-up at the end today about India. where they're telling you that 75% of all of their deaths and adverse reactions since, I believe, I don't want to misquote the date, but they gave you, it was a huge, the majority have been within 3 days of the vaccine administration. Think about that. If you want to see that, check out my show from yesterday. Look at my, don't go to YouTube, go to thelastamericanvagabond.com and you'll find all of them, including all the shows I did between this time and when you thought you saw me last, if you've only been watching on YouTube. But it's incredible. There's no misunderstanding what that shows you, but nobody wants to talk about it. It says that's a known adverse reaction rate of 0.48% per dose. That's, and remember, that's 1%, guys, times it by 100. What do you know? That becomes an incredibly high percentage, doesn't it? Adverse reactions, I don't mean times the percentage. I mean times the number by 100 and then figure the percentage, and it's a dramatic increase. Adverse reactions to AstraZeneca's vaccine includes 4,325 blood disorders, five of them fatal, 5,534 cardiac disorders, 76 fatal, 4,642 ear disorders, 7,814 eye disorders, 50,233 gastrointestinal disorders, eight of them fatal, 182,753 general disorders, 240 of them fatal, 1,714 immune system disorders, one fatal, 11,000 infections, 61 fatal, over 4,000 injuries, one fatal, about 6.5 metabolic disorders, four fatal, 67,000 and a half muscle and tissue disorders, 139 neoplasms, three of them fatal, 118,942 disorders of the nervous system, 106 fatal, 91 pregnancy conditions, 10,262 psychiatric disorders, one fatal, 1,565 renal and urinary disorders, 2,076 reproductive and breast disorders, 16,732 respiratory disorders, 71 fatal, 32,224 skin disorders, one fatal, and 6,461 vascular disorders, 39 fatal, 168 reports of blood clots, 32 fatal. In total, from taking the DNA vector AstraZeneca vaccine, there have been 548,498 adverse reactions, including 627 deaths. This is just the UK. In 1,044 people from, to read too many numbers, 23.5 million injections. That's one or more, with an average of 3.75 adverse reactions in 0.62% of those being tested. Now, it goes on and on in the interest of time. This goes over Pfizer. It goes over it's shocking. It goes over Moderna. And the point, all of these figures are from the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, which together with the Department of Health and Social Care, Public Health England, and NHS has denied any causal connection between vaccines and the 961 deaths. You're right. You realize how dumb that is, seeing as how Norway and Denmark have both proven the connection between the blood clots and J&J, right? There's pretending like there's nothing there. Even the CDC still pretends like that link is not proven on their website, despite them proving it. There's a clear effort to keep this stuff from your view. I recommend you read through this stuff and then mosey on down here and check it for yourself, because that's what you should do. Intelligent people will confirm this stuff. But this has been there, guys, for a long time. India's health ambassador, Tamil actor Vivek, dies one day after taking the COVID vaccine. All right, there's a lot of this going around. Now, of course, they're going to say, well, we don't know for sure, because that's what they've been saying about everything. But this isn't the one I was going to talk about today. We're going to talk about another person working with another vaccine company. But you will see this frequently. Millions are skipping their second doses of COVID vaccine. Gee, I wonder why. Right? Their argument here is to try to make it out to be some kind of, well, I feel I'm protected with my one. Well, why would that be? Like, that's their best argument they can make. Why would they choose to? These are, okay, understand that these are the people that are listening to what you're being told by the mainstream media, right? They're saying, go get it. And they're going, okay, I need it. Then they go out, get one, and walk away going, nah, I know better than you. I'm only going to get one. I feel fine. No, that's not what's happening, guys. That's what the New York Times and their propaganda effort wants you to think. That they feel so, I'm good, and I just try. What they're doing, they're stopping because it's bad. And you find that when you actually do your research. And even the New York Times mentions that. People are refusing this because after the first shot, they had horrendous side effects. We're talking millions of people. Oh, I think I chose not to. I had highlights, but I think I chose to skip past this. But I think it was over 5 million. Yeah, right here. More than 5 million people have missed their second dose, according to the most recent data from CDC. That is more than double the rate among people who got inoculated in the first several weeks of the nationwide vaccine campaign. Why? Because they don't want the second one, because it probably, there are people that almost died from the first shot. There are people that have died. And what's even more insulting, and remember, what's funny is saying that is so contentious. I even saw somebody, and I don't like to name people by name, but I saw Kyle Clancy do a show, and he literally claimed that there have been zero issues, no deaths, nothing. Why? Because the media says we haven't confirmed them. Not confirming them is not a real journalist does not then translate that to none. That's we don't know is what that means. And the reality is we do know, because we have deaths. The CDC has admitted 6 of them around blood clots. So how can we then turn around as a journalist and say zero on the air? Because people are doing what they're told. Even classically anti-establishment people that are countering the politics, whatever, they have lost the plot in the medical sphere. It's frustrating. And there's a lot of it, guys. There's a lot of it. Here, Jimmy Dore just tweeted this yesterday, or 2 days ago. I had my second Moderna shot last Saturday. I am still experiencing flu-like symptoms, body aches, mild headaches, and a wave of exhaustion that came out of nowhere. Should I be concerned that it is lasting for a week? Anybody else have similar experience? And now, you know, I think Jimmy Dore does a good job in a lot of ways. I think he's choosing to ignore what's going on with all this because of the channel. And I mean, I wouldn't do that, but I know a lot of people that do because they feel like they're making a difference in certain areas. Right? I'm not even trying to rationalize it. I don't think this is the right thing to do, but I understand is what I'm saying, why people choose to cultivate what they say. I find that to be self-censorship, and I think that's a problem. But in any sense, this upset me a little, not because I think Jimmy Dore should be watching all of our content, but because literally people constantly everywhere in spheres that I know he's in are talking about this. Go, should it last more than a week? Of course it will. I mean, literally, like, I find that most people I talk to are saying that they have some variation for longer than a week. And so I just simply said, Jesus, Jimmy, have you been ignoring everything we've all been saying? Have me on the show. I'll fill you in on all the info you're asking for. Most everyone who took this experimental injection is feeling the same way. And of course, I made sure to include these so people could see it for themselves with the links too. This is January 12th, 2021. mRNA-1723, which is the one he took. It's the Moderna vaccine. In January 2021, NIH wrote, experimental coronavirus vaccine, highly effective. Now, of course, that's highly effective in preventing symptoms. Doesn't stop transmission. You can still catch it. So I don't even see why anybody would take this, especially if you're not really in danger. And I think most people aren't. I don't want to deviate. I'm going to stay focused on the vaccine discussion. It's experimental. Right? So they're testing. There's no way around that. This is an experiment, hence the word experimental. It's experimenting on you, as well as the fact that the FDA, according to April 6, 2021, continues to say there is no FDA-approved vaccine to prevent COVID-19. So this is an unapproved experimental vaccine. And yet they're trying to mandate this for people. That is literally a crime, guys. It's because they've successfully manipulated enough people to think that it's not experimental. Or that it's not, that it is approved, right? I mean, that's ultimately what's happening. They are convincing people that this thing is something that it's not, or something, or that it is something that, I mean, in either case, they're lying to people. And this is not just around this one topic, it's around the entire agenda. But this is what people listen to. Oh, the CDC recommends pregnant women get coronavirus vaccine. Well, then it must be safe. Well, it's not, though. Because the fact that the CDC is recommending they get this thing that has not been tested on pregnant women, and in fact is still, if they're even doing them, underway, shows you that they're not concerned with safety. They're concerned with the vaccine being administered. You could maybe argue that means because they think it's so dangerous that even the risk to the pregnant woman is worth it because, okay. So if you believe that, ask yourself why you haven't looked at the recent updates of the percentages on the CDC website, which puts it right about the flu, 0.14%. Okay, so how can it be around the flu and yet it's so catastrophically dangerous that we have to risk this dangerous thing that wasn't tested properly on pregnant women to pregnant women? It doesn't make sense, right? I don't understand how it can simultaneously be so dangerous that we have to put ourselves at other risks And yet you can look at the statistics and show you very clearly that if you're a child, if you're under 19, you have a 0% risk. If you're between 20 and 40, you basically have a non-existent risk. And for the general populace, it's 0.14%, according to the real science and the real data that even the CDC has admitted to, even the WHO has admitted to. Right? This is the point. This is the problem with people saying that this fake news, and when we're literally all we're doing is pointing to the same people that they think they're looking at, but they're not. They're only listening to what they're being told from those people. Isn't that funny? I mean, this is a crazy situation that we're in. I've never seen it this ridiculous. Here's a quick little graph. This is back when it first came out. It's talking about the vaccines itself, and it's saying that the vaccine may only be 53% effective in subjects 65 to 74 and 0% effective in subjects 75 years or older. Subjects 65 years or older comprise about 80% of the COVID vaccines, right? It says subjects, where was it? In children, safety and efficacy data was either not tested or insufficient in children younger than 16. In addition, there was only one case of COVID-19 in subjects 16 to 17 years old, and the study did not have enough statistical power to measure the effectiveness. Okay, so even if you feel like they rushed through and caught up, first of all, that's rushed. Like, let's say they did this since then, that's rushed. And secondly, it would not be completed, even if rushed, even considering what they previously already did, right? We would still be in the context of that, and yet they're already giving this to kids. They're already giving it to pregnant women. So how is it possible that they can tell you from the manufacturers that we didn't do that? And yet we're already pushing it, sort of the way that Israel was trying to convince the CEO of Pfizer to vaccinate the children way in the beginning, guys, because there's more going on here. Now, I'm not even going to speak to that. I just simply know if they're doing that, why would they go against what they're being told as what is safe if what they're doing is for your safety? I find it impossible to think there's not something going on right there. More U.S. colleges requiring students to get vaccinated before returning to campus. Now, you could argue this is okay. I disagree, because we've done this before, because children and schools and colleges have mandated different flu vaccines, whatever. I think that's ridiculous. And I don't know why you would agree with that, but let's just put that aside. Because even if you agree with that, this is not the same thing, because this is experimental and unapproved. You cannot mandate something that is being experimented on and that is not currently approved by the FDA. You simply can't. You can emergency authorize things. They can try to make it. You can't tell me you have to take this thing that's still being tested before you come back to school. You can't do that. It's a crime, guys. This is the point. But it's happening. It's happening more than just schools too. Houston hospitals threaten to fire workers who refuse COVID-19 vaccine. I actually just showed you this the last show from a different outlet. They're threatening to fire people who refuse the vaccine, despite the fact that it's unapproved and experimental, according to the NIH and the FDA. I don't understand how we are the only sane people in the world that can see this. And this is my opinion. This is stated. This is written down. You cannot mandate this until it is approved. But here we are. You don't just get to go, well, because danger, because COVID's dangerous, so we just get to skip over all the rules. Nope, doesn't work like that. And here's what I said in response to that, because this is hilarious to me in a macabre way. They're firing heroes, right? They're firing the heroes that refuse the COVID vaccine. So we know that 60%, and this was, again, to be clear, that statistic was cited at least a month or more ago, maybe a little more than that. But still, nonetheless, at a very crucial point in time, we reported from the mainstream media that 60% of the healthcare workers were refusing the vaccine. It's happening the same way other places do. I'll show you that in a minute. India is the one I'm thinking of. So I said, but I thought they were all heroes though, right? So they stop being heroes when they refuse the vaccine? My body, my choice, right? So whether they're heroes actually has nothing to do with the work or what they accomplish, but hinges entirely on if they do what they're told. Got it. Okay, I understand now. So it was really just a propaganda stunt. Of course, we all knew that. But isn't it funny to watch them crumble right in front of you where it's just, oh, they're heroes, and oh, now they're fired. It's pathetic is what it is. And I just reiterated this in a different point because, as Slow News Day points out, UC Santa Cruz is mandating the vaccine the same way, mandating the jab. UC's current president has a bland medical background. He replaces former DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano. Because this is normal, link is the press release, photo is the email to the staff. So it says, the University of California Office of President is proposing a policy that would make COVID vaccines mandatory for all faculty, staff, academic appointees, and students. It is experimental and unapproved. And there must be someone at some level that knows that's not okay. And just like we pointed out in the Israeli document, it's because these people are either some actively keeping quiet, some by keeping quiet from fear of reprisal. That's everywhere right now, even them. Crazy. Oh, and then one last point before we jump into the blood clot is the idea of the Moderna. I've actually covered this document before, but I want to point out something yet again and reiterate one point. United States Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, filing for Moderna, right? This is on, where was the date again? 2000, it was a while back, so it wasn't recent. Not necessarily relevant, but right there. June 2020, okay, right here. Now, going down to page 70, you will find an interesting statement. Now, this is actually important to read in two different ways. One, that it does, it's to clarify this a bit too, so we're all accurate in how we report this, right? It says, currently, this is in the Moderna filing for the SEC. Currently, mRNA is considered a gene therapy product by the FDA, right? So that's clear. mRNA is considered a gene therapy product as it stands. It says, unlike certain gene therapies that irreversibly alter cell data, DNA, and could act as a source of side effects. Oh, not this one, though. mRNA-based medicines are designed to not irreversibly change the cell DNA, which right there is funny to point out. Remember that whole discussion about it alters your DNA, and they all like laughed and said, oh, you're so stupid. That's so crazy. Well, it's really not that stupid, especially if you're talking about mRNA and it's an mRNA medicine. And how would the average person even know that it does? They've designed it to not change the DNA. So the fact that they laugh at it like it's so stupid shows you that there's something weird. Like they would go, well, that's a fair statement, but here's why it doesn't happen, right? Because we changed that part of it. Right? It just needs to show you how either the people that laughed at it didn't know themselves that was possible or knew that they were trying to make sure you didn't really dig into this at all. Now, in any case, their argument is this specific mRNA-based medicine does not irreversibly change your DNA. I find that to be largely irrelevant, not because that's not dangerous one way or the other, but because what it already does is alarming, whatever you want to call it. And I've already gone over this in a past show, and I've gone over specifically what exactly it does and why that's pretty alarming. And what it says, however, side effects observed in gene therapy could negatively impact the perception of mRNA medicines, despite the differences in mechanism. So what they're clearly stating here is that mRNA medicines, at least in their statement and their perception, is different, at the very least, than mRNA as a gene. Say, it's a gene therapy because it states it in that document is not accurate. Now, do I think it's a gene therapy based on how this is working or a gene-based vaccine? Yes, obviously. But it's important to be better than the mainstream media, to fully understand what it's saying and why. It says, in addition, because no product in which mRNA is the primary active ingredient has been approved, still, by the way, to this point, the regulatory pathway for approval is uncertain, which, by the way, hasn't happened yet. There is no approved vaccine for COVID-19, which we just showed you, right? Interesting. I thought that was important, right? Because my primary objective is to inform you so you know how to report these things properly to people that you talk to, right? So just coming out and saying, it's a gene vaccine, and people will hear on Fox News and CNN that that's fake news, and they'll walk away. But it's better to understand this so you can talk with nuance, right? And educate them. Now, going into the next part, I want to start with a interesting video, just the beginning part, from Dr. Now, I always say Pavlovsky. I think it's Pavlovsky. I think it's Pavlovsky. I've been mispronouncing it. But so you guys don't forget, and bear with me for those that have seen this a few times, I'm just going to play the first one. I just want to play this so people know where he comes from, because this doesn't really get into who he is. It's important to understand that he's a credentialed, a credible person to speak on these things. Here he is speaking in front of Congress. This is important. This is before, this was in 2020.
I heard earlier that there's no real concern about aluminum because it's such a small amount, and so it really shouldn't matter. But the kind of aluminum that we put into vaccines is a different kind of aluminum that we see environmentally. This is called a nanoparticle, and nanoparticles bind really tightly to the bacteria antigens, the virus antigens, the food protein antigens, and any other contaminants that are in the vaccines that we may not know about. And we know that the biochemical properties of nanoparticles is that they are capable of entering the brain. And so we have not evaluated the safety of the aluminum nanoparticle and its injection and where it goes when it gets into the body and whether it gets into the brain. Do vaccine ingredients belong in the brain? No. Do they get into the brain? No one has ever studied it. But animal studies using the same chemicals that are in vaccines that we give to children directly demonstrate that the vaccine ingredients do enter the brain. We are ignoring this information. There are scientists in Europe who've actually done studies on the aluminum nanoparticle and have shown that it can persist in the brain for years and decades. And so what we're seeing is a large outbreak of neurodevelopmental disabilities in adults, including Alzheimer's. And one of the main factors that they're finding in the brains of people with Alzheimer's is the aluminum nanoparticle that's directly related to the vaccines that we're giving. So we have never studied whether the aluminum that we're giving in vaccines gets into the brain, and we've never measured whether it stays in the brain and what it does if it does stay in the brain. But we do know that vaccines are supposed to cause inflammation in the body. But we have more than half of our children with chronic inflamed conditions. And we've never allowed ourselves to ask the question, if the vaccines cause inflammation acutely, do they continue to create inflammation chronically? We have 1 in 5 with neurodevelopmental disabilities, 1 in 10 with ADD and ADHD, 1 in 35 with autism, 1 in 11 with asthma, and 1 in 20 under the age of 5 with seizures.
Very interesting. Now, it goes on to a second part, but I just want to make sure you saw this, that he is somebody that is worth listening to. Now, what's interesting, by the way, before I even play this first opening part for this video, this is in a different interview from somebody else, reposted the part from his clip. Anyway, just the part where he's speaking is important, is that he's talking about the lipid nanoparticles, right? This, and guess what that is and why that's relevant to the discussion today. Those of you follow my show know the spike protein that we're talking about is encased in that lipid nanoparticle, right? So if we're talking about the spike protein being a problem, and you'll see why in the next point, we already know that the lipid nanoparticles, based on what he's talking about and based on plenty of other things we've covered, are dangerous. So weird that the two things, you know, that they're almost converging to cause more than we think. So let me, yeah, that's right. I downloaded this so I could play it for you with good audio. Let me pull this up.
When studies are done on injections that are thought to be vaccines, we sometimes need 7, 10, or even 15 years to really understand what the injection does to the body. And
so think about that right out of the gate, right? He's telling you right there, as an expert, there's no way that we could possibly know the side effects of what these are until that far down the line, which is how these safety trials usually go. And get this, they're actually still trying to pretend like this was not rushed in any sense. Operation Warp Speed. Like Trump's whole point was how fast we did this. And now they're trying to come back and be like, no, it was because of our previous research, right? That, like, we're going to really pretend like the safety trials have anything to do with the previous research. This is how dumb they think people are.
What it does to those around us. And so there's automatically this assumption that when the authorities say, these injections are safe, that we actually have adequate data and adequate observational data to understand whether or not these injections are safe. The bottom line is we don't have enough data to understand safety. The other thing is that we are made to believe in the public eye that this is a vaccine against a viral infection. So the entire world is thinking that this is a vaccine to protect us against SARS-CoV-2 viral infection. And when you have a vaccine that's supposed to be effective as a vaccine, you're supposed to have antibody immunity against the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And that's never been evaluated with these injections as to whether or not we have antibody immunity to a SARS-CoV-2 virus.
Right. And this is why we don't, why they continue to tell you, this is why all you get is it's 94% effective against symptoms. That's why we keep saying that even what they're telling you has not actually been like verified, better word for that, or proven, I guess. Right. Just because Pfizer tells the government tells you, that doesn't mean anything, in my opinion. Right. That's why you have peer reviewed situations. If those don't know what peer review means, it's for science or for a lot of different things. But the sense is that you don't just write a scientific study and then hand it off to the government and they can, of course, use it whether it, to their interests, because we know that's how governments work. No, you write a study or you write some research or you write something out, and then it has to go through a process where you have other scientists review that information and give their opinion on it. Right. So they can go, well, no, this is right, or this is wrong, or here's the problem. And that's why peer review is there. But see, this is not being peer reviewed. This is being stated and being sold. People like this would be the people who would peer review. Not, you know, there's people who literally have the title of someone who's in the peer review. I forget what the term is. In any case, I went to school in my actually culinary school. My gastronomy teacher was somebody in those circles for gastronomical culinary type studies. Again, gastronomical would be the right word. In any sense, these are people that are, their job is to research and check before it gets put out. And that's what this person is telling you, that they didn't do that.
Instead, what we have is the genetic information of what is believed to be a piece of the SARS-CoV-2 virus.
And that piece
is called the spike protein.
There you go.
And the technology that's being used is a technology to make this injection that's never been used in vaccine science or methodology before with any kind of success. So we are essentially taking the genetic instructions that make a synthetic spike protein believed to be a part of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And we're giving those sets of instructions into the body and asking the human body to take the genetic instructions of that spike protein and make more of it in our own machinery.
Think about that. And that will be much more relevant as we get into the discussion of the spike protein being the problem. But remember that that spike protein that is clearly a lot of experts think is the problem is also encased in that fatty lipid nanoparticle, which is also part of the problem. Interesting.
And so this messenger RNA technology, which is what it's called, is delivering the genetic instructions for us to make the spike protein. And the problem is that no study has ever been done to test its safety, but also no study has been done to test whether we turn on the production of that spike protein and ever turn it off.
Exactly. No studies, though. Trust the science, though, right?
And so spike protein in the naturally occurring SARS-CoV-2 viral infection has been shown to cause brain inflammation and neurological damage, heart attacks, lung disease, liver disease, kidney disease, and interacting with the male and female reproductive systems, along with affecting blood binding to oxygen and blood clotting.
What do you know?
And so we know that the natural disease of SARS-CoV-2, because of the effects of the spike protein, is making people sick with all of these kinds of systemic illnesses.
What does this sound like? Sounds like exactly what Dr. Bakhti was saying. Sounds like what Dr. Michael Yeadon was saying. You know why they think this? Because they actually read the science. And I'm going to show you the science that they would refer to. The science that was done months and months and months ago that came out and said, yeah, this is dangerous. That's what this spike protein can do. Here's a problem. Right? These studies are done in the context of how SARS-CoV-2 spike protein can be a problem, but within the studies themselves, they go, this should very clearly reflect on whether or not the spike protein vaccines are also dangerous. Nobody wants to consider this stuff. The experts are speaking out, and all they do is get dismissed, disparaged, and insulted.
And so now we're taking that spike protein genetic instructions And we're asking our bodies to make more of that spike protein. And so by making more of that spike protein, we are essentially creating the symptoms and the illness of COVID-19 by giving people the potential to have brain damage and neurological damage.
I'll leave it there. I recommend you watch the rest of this, including the full thing. And this is the whole point, that these, whether we're talking the vaccine causing the illness or whether the vaccine simply causing things that are diagnosed as the illness, it's almost moot because it is killing people. It's hurting people. And that's undeniable at this point. I don't know how we can keep ignoring these experts. Right. What I think is funny is, you know, hopefully that guy in the beginning is still here. I wonder what he's thinking now. Right. Is this all fake news conspiracy theory, or is this experts speaking on scientific documentation, which we'll get into next, as well as things we've already talked about? It's pretty interesting. But jumping over into the beginning of the most important part in my mind. From December 2020, the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein alters brain function in 2D static and 3D microfluidic in vitro models of the human blood-brain barrier. What do you know? Let's find out what it has to say. Now, you can see here, if you're interested in the, you know, bona fides and where they're from and who, you know, the different schools, just jump down to the point. This is for those that were waiting for me in the Discord community. It was a bunch of these that ended up making this take a lot longer to get up today. I highly recommend you read this all the way through, even though a lot of this is difficult to read for things like, you know, just looking at that paragraph, you could tell it's a lot of just kind of, you know, verb. It's difficult to a lot of degrees, but it's worth your time to especially try to understand what it's saying. Now, here's the point, the main point in the discussion. It's also listed up in the abstract, but this is more specific. And here's the point. The analysis within this report provides evidence that the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein can directly affect the barrier function of the blood-brain barrier, which gives deeper insight into the neuropathology associated with COVID-19. SARS-CoV-2 can induce microclots formation in the vasculature of periphery tissues and within the vessels of the CNS. In fact, Bruce et al., the study, which you can read if you're interested, found that 6 out of 20 cases had microthrombi. Remember, we're talking about thrombocytopenia and these different blood, these swelling and platelets and the whole issue we're talking about here, and acute infraction of the brain that's interesting. I read that as infraction last time, but that's not what that says. Infarction. Obstruction of the blood supply to an organ or region of the tissue. Oh, interesting. Okay. So it says, it's basically the same point. We report the evident breakdown of the blood-brain barrier by SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. The other next study is where it gets into why this is relevant to the other one. But look, right now, before we even get to the next one, what we're dealing with is the genetic creation of the exact SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, because otherwise it wouldn't work the way they're talking. If this was some other spike protein, it wouldn't even work, because the whole point is it's supposed to stop you from being able to get sick from SARS-CoV-2 because it recognizes the spike protein. That's the point, right? So the reality is this is telling you that spike protein has the ability to cause exactly what we're hearing. The issues in the brain, basically the same stuff, the strokes, the blood clots, the same concept. And it also says that about the evident breakdown of the blood-brain barrier, which right there should make you, maybe go, okay, wait a minute. That's an interesting thing to come up now, seeing as how nobody's ever really explained why we were and still weirdly in some places are testing people by jamming this thing back into their blood-brain barrier. Nobody has been able to give me a genuine explanation about why that makes sense, seeing as how now we've got the same test being done where they swab the inside of their nose. Right? Why? Maybe there's more happening here. Maybe there's something much larger going on, which is all I'm ever asking people to consider, that there's obvious correlation within these interesting discoveries that we're finding, but it gets much, much bigger than that. Oh, and I wanted to point out, because this is what I will do, despite the fact that Alex Bernison still has me blocked for ridiculous reasons, because I asked him about the cannabis discussion and really just pointed out that I thought he was incorrect. It's blocked, which is what objective people do, apparently. But nonetheless, he's still sharing good information around COVID-19. This is where this came from. But I wanted to share this part where Kevin McKernan shared, who I'm not incredibly familiar with McKernan. I know we follow each other, but I believe he's posted a lot of really great work on this whole discussion. But you'll notice, which is that I didn't even notice this before. This is why he made this comment in his description, Cannabis Genome Project. Interesting. Now, here's what he had to say. Tell me I have that. Oh, so I just reorganized it. Okay, so here is what he said. This is what Alex said. This is a hell of a find. Spike proteins, not the virus, the proteins themselves do attach to blood cells and trigger a pro-inflammatory response per this peer-reviewed study. So this is the point. And whether it's the spike protein from the vaccine or the spike protein from SARS-CoV-2, because they're the same, or so we're told. Clearly, we can see the same things happening. That's why it looks like they're getting the symptoms. They may be getting COVID-19, and maybe they are, who knows, because it's the same thing. It's causing the same inflammatory problem. But as Kevin McKernan points out, it's addressed, meaning like you can deal with that problem with a compound that easily crosses the blood-brain barrier, but many people are scared of it because of a book you authored citing data from many government agencies that you now question. Well done, Kevin. And what he's pointing out is the fact that THC, tetrahydrocannabidiol, can fight back. Gee, I wonder why it's made illegal everywhere, right? It's almost like it can fight against everything they're causing in our bodies. But the interesting, I think I was meant to just look at this first. Oh, well, I'll just put it next. Oh, it's going to go way far. Okay, sorry. I wanted to show this real quick. Where are we? Here we go. So this is on the same point of that study. Remember what I was going to, I'll just refresh that when we get back to it. So the cannabis part is interesting. The reason I found this so relevant is because one, THC has the ability to essentially fight back to a degree against what's happening, not surprising to me at all. And this is really like the first thing I can point to confirm what I've been thinking this whole time. So I'm glad I'm going to get into that. But, and also because Kevin is pointing out sort of the reason that I got blocked, that I said, Alex, you're wrong about cannabis, and blocks me. It's also very odd that he is, you know, he cited the very people in that book that he's now calling out. Doesn't mean you can't change your mind. Just shouldn't block people from realizing the same thing that you maybe now realized. But in any case, this is the one of the other things he cites from Temple Health. SARS-CoV-2 spike proteins disrupt the blood-brain barrier, potentially raising risk of neurological damage in COVID-19 patients. Now it says, like a key, and this is just more about how the specific spike protein part works. SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes coronavirus disease, attaches to specific molecules. And now, the whole time I'm reading this, remember, you could think about it in the same frame of the spike protein from SARS-CoV-2 that's in the vaccine. Attaches to specific molecules on the host cell surface, opening gateways into the cell interior. Viral entry into host cells triggers a prodigious immune response. Much of this battle is waged within the lungs, which explains why many patients hospitalized with COVID-19 have severe respiratory symptoms. What do you know? Isn't that interesting? Now, it also says respiratory symptoms, however, are only part of the story. Increasing evidence points toward blood vessel inflammation as having a crucial impact on the severity of COVID-19. So if you add a vaccine in this mix, what does that sound like is going to happen? In addition, anywhere from 30 to 80% of patients experience neurological symptoms, including dizziness, headaches, nausea, and a loss of concentration. These symptoms suggest that SARS-CoV-2 also affects cells of the central nervous system. Well, that's interesting. This wasn't the one. I think I can grab this really quickly. I bet you I still got it. I just connected something in my mind. No. Well, in any case, I might still have it up somewhere. The CDC has posted on their website. Yeah, it's not there. I won't waste any time on it. But the CDC has posted all the same things, all the same points, right? About the vaccine causing dizziness, headaches, nausea, loss of I mean, exactly, almost in the same order. And saying, well, these are normal, except no, they're not normal, because if they're signs of blood clots or something else, it's quite alarming. But we'll get to that in a minute. I just find that very telling. Now, going back to the other point, remember, in regard to posting this about the study and realizing that there is actually something we can do about it, tetrahydrocannabidiol, I'm used to saying cannabidiol, attenuates, as in stops, helps, right? As it says there, specifically reduce the force, effect, or value of staphylococcal enterotoxin B induced inflammatory lung injury and prevents mortality in mice. This is really interesting, actually. Exposure to staphylococcal or SEB resulted in acute mortality, while THC treatment led to 100% survival of the mice. 100%? You don't get that. I mean, it's just crazy to me that cannabis, like, it's so apparent to me why this has been sought out and kept away from you. Because this is important, whether we're talking hemp or cannabis in general, which is also cannabis under that band, under that umbrella. It is a powerful tool that you can use to change your life. And I'm not talking, you don't have to smoke it if you don't want to. Grind it up and drink it in shakes. It is powerful to help your body. That's why your body has a natural endocannabinoid system. That's why you have natural cannabinoids in breast milk, because your body is built to run with this stuff. It's built to make your body more efficient in fighting off illnesses, improve your immune system, right? There's a reason. And guys, I've done entire studies on this, or articles and shows on this, based on studies. And I'm telling you, this stuff is very clear. It's amazing how we can look at something like Reefer Madness and still pretend like some of the stuff they said was true. It's like, come on, they've been lying to you since the start. But this is interesting to me. And that's why I think in a large way, this stuff is not, you know, being used for people, because they know it will, you know, there's 1,000 medications this can replace. Now it says, our results suggest that THC is a potent anti-inflammatory. Here's the general point. An anti-inflammatory compound that may serve as a novel therapeutic to suppress SEB-induced pulmonary inflammation by modulating critical miRNA, which is microRNA, involved in SEB-induced toxicity and death. Something that could be used. Protective effects of, again, tetrahydrocannabinol results from the alteration in lung dysbiosis. Now it says acute lung injury, ALI. In the current study, we investigated the role played by lung microbiota in ALI with or without THC treatments. All THC treated mice survived, all of them. So it's multiple studies we're seeing this suppress the inflammation in the lungs. So if you want to suppress the inflammation in your lungs and fight this off, you know, you should somehow ingest THC instead of, you know, jamming some kind of a device down your lungs. And you know, we saw that in New York, where something upwards of 90% of people were being killed by the ventilators. And yet, and even Dr. Seidel came out and made this huge video about how we're not doing the right thing. We're hurting people. That was a doctor who was literally doing that, you know, and this is probably going to be censored just for pointing this out. This is science, right? This is trusting the science doesn't mean we don't like that science, right? This is a very clear finding that they don't talk about. SARS-CoV-2 spike protein elicits cell signaling in human host cells. Now, back to the spike protein discussion, published on January 11th, right? So we have this one first. This one on January 11th. Here's what it says. Recent observations suggest that the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein can, by itself, that's very important, trigger cell signaling that can lead to various biological processes. It is reasonable to assume that such events, in some cases, result in the pathogenesis of certain diseases. This protein may also affect the cells of systemic and coronary vasculatures, eliciting other cardiovascular diseases such as coronary artery disease, systemic hypertension, and stroke. It is important to consider the possibility that SARS-CoV-2 spike protein produced by the new COVID-19 vaccines triggers cell signaling events that promote PAH, other cardiovascular complications, and or complications in other tissues, organs in certain individuals. This is the science, guys. This is, you know, I'm doing that as a joke, the science, right? This is science. When they keep saying, trust the science, it's a ridiculous, arbitrary thing that will later be laughed at, like, trust women. During the Kavanaugh hearing, trust women. It's like, it's just dumb to argue. What you mean? Even the ones that are lying to us, even the ones that are making things up, even that mass murderer, lying criminal in prison, right? It's just stupid to argue. And that's only because there was a narrative, an agenda there. In this case, trust the science is an ignorant thing to say as well. You should do your due diligence and show common sense and critical thinking, like in any circumstance, because you know what? Science has been wrong too. Scientists have been wrong. Scientists are paid. They are manipulated. They are influenced like anybody. So when we stare at this stuff, realize this is science and it should be considered, and then considered along the side of whatever else, including the counterbalance, the argument that it's not true. But you won't find that right now. That's my point. This is the science on this topic, and you didn't hear about this from mainstream media. Think about that. They're telling you that we should consider this very clear risk of the spike protein, which they're happy to point out because SARS-CoV-2 is so dangerous, so we're told, when it talks about COVID-19. But no, and the study says, well, clearly they're the same thing, so we should consider the new COVID-19 vaccines and whether they're triggering the same problem, such as strokes. We will need to monitor carefully, it says, the long-term consequences of COVID-19 vaccines that introduce the spike protein into the human body. You know what they're not doing? That. At all. They're monitoring your body for side effects, so they can justify that, but they're not monitoring your body in regard to the spike protein specifically. Furthermore, while human data on the possible long-term consequences of spike protein-based COVID-19 vaccines will not be available soon, meaning you're still being tested, it is imperative that appropriate experimental animal models are employed as soon as possible. You mean the ones they skipped? Yes. To ensure that the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein does not elicit any signs of pathogenesis or PAH or any other chronic pathological conditions. But no, that's not happening. Right? So do they ignore this science? Do they not know it's there? How can that be if they're actively looking for the science so they can inform you? This is a very real danger that they're not telling you. We need to consider, in their conclusion, the long-term consequences carefully, it says, especially when they are administered to otherwise healthy individuals, as well as young adults and children, which don't need them, by the way, in addition to evaluating data that will become available from SARS-CoV-2 infected individuals, as well as those who receive the spike protein-based vaccines. Further investigations of the effects of the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein in human cells and appropriate animal models are warranted. We need to continue testing because this is alarming. That's the point. That's what they're saying. Now, recognize they start this paragraph off by saying, well, because we know we need vaccines and COVID-19 vaccines are so important, they all do that. That means nothing when they counter that statement by saying this could be dangerous and we need to investigate. They say that so they don't get immediately unceremoniously ignored and bastardized and fired, because that's what happens to people that come out, like that big mass study that came out early on that said, these are dangerous. And they said, you're crazy. And they all got fired and they got deleted and they were forced to retract it. Well, now they've been vindicated, but they don't get their jobs back. This is how science gets manipulated. In any case, they're at least confident enough to write out the facts that it's dangerous. SARS-CoV-2 binds platelets, H2, to enhance thrombosis in COVID-19. So too does the spike protein in the vaccine. Results. SARS-CoV-2 and its spike protein directly enhanced platelet activation. So you see all these connecting to everything we're seeing that they keep saying, we don't know for sure. We can't connect any. We don't know. We can't. No causal link. It's all right in front of you. The spike protein directly enhanced platelet activation, such as platelet aggregation, PAC1 binding, CD62P expression, a granule secretion, dense granule release, platelet spreading, and clot retraction in vitro, and thereby spike protein enhanced thrombosis formation in wild type mice transfused with the HH2 transgenic platelets. Right. So this is, it says, basically saying that this is causing the same concerns that we just read in the other ones. It says SARS-CoV-2 and its spike protein directly stimulated platelets to facilitate the release of coagulation factors, the secretion of inflammatory factors, and the formation of leukocyte platelet aggregates. Crazy. How is it possible that this study that was done on September 4th, 2020, September 4th, this study being done on January 11th, this one done on December 2020. How is it possible that none of this has made the mainstream media? Because they are not here to inform you. That's a point. Otherwise, you would say this stuff, right? This is science. It's the only science on this topic, and they're not talking about it. Why would that be? Aren't they interested in your safety? No, they're interested in the narrative and making sure the vaccine is administered. That's it. Here is Dr. Bhakti speaking with Taylor Hudak on her fantastic interview, specifically on the discussion of blood clots. And I'll show you Michael Yeadon next.
If you're going to use these vaccines on humans, you better go and do the animal experiments beforehand and not do what is being done now, namely human experiments with a system that is so goddamn dangerous that I cannot understand that my own colleagues don't realize this. You see, and if there is anyone I say is at fault, I say it is my own colleagues and scientists, because they should damn well know this. And if they don't, they better sit down with people. I'm not alone in this. There are thousands who think as I do. And we would like to talk to our colleagues to find out why they don't think that this could be the case. Why they don't think that all these people with adverse events are getting clots all over the place. Why? Because this is not a matter of half-half. Either they are right or we are right. And I'm not saying that we are right. I'm just saying that if there's a grain of truth in what I think is true, and the events are evolving such that it seems as if we were right. I mean, we wrote this many months ago. Okay.
That's an interesting thing to think about, right? Look at him from his angle, pointing to the science, doing his research. And nonetheless, he's still willing to come out because he's objective, because he's intelligent, and say, look, I'm not saying I'm 100% right. I'm saying this is something we should be concerned about and we should research it. But then you have the media coming out, the media of all people, talking to an expert like him and saying, you're fake news. You're a crazy conspiracy theorist. You're wrong because we know for sure, right? Which one makes more sense to you, that somebody's being objective and logical and considering both sides and asking you to research this because he's done his due diligence, versus the media who will gaslight and strawman arguments and ad hominem attacks and just say, no, you can't look at that because fake news. I don't understand why why grownups can't see through this stuff. It's crazy to me.
Okay. And they've all turned out to be right. So why don't we just sit down and talk about it, guys? Let's just sit down. We have to, because of the world and because of our children and your children and your grandchildren and the next generations. We're not doing this for ourselves. You know, I have a family here. I have a little child. I'm not going to allow him to enter this experiment. I don't care who is doing this experiment and why they are doing this experiment. I am not going to allow my child to enter this experiment. And I tell you, politicians, and you guys of the big finance, and you pharmaceuticals, and the doctors who are in this, if you want to do it to your own beloved ones and your children, you're going to do it. But I say, please don't.
Jay's asking, this is science? Nobody, what, the video? Who said the video was science? That's a stupid question. I was just showing you the science on the scientific studies that we were going over. Would you like to see them again? I'm happy to show you the science that we were just covering. The science, the science, the science, the science, right? Those are the science, right? Just in case you were confused. Okay, let's go back to the video that we were just looking at. So we were talking about the blood clots. And he is telling you that he has clearly seen that this is what the research shows. This is what we were just covering. That this is most likely blood clots that are being caused, and all the side effects of blood clots and all these symptoms of blood clots are literally everything else that we're seeing right now, right? That's quite clear. Now, he could be wrong, as he pointed out. Sure, it's possible. But why is this not being considered? Here is a comment by Michael Yeadon, two of them, in fact, in the same vein. Let's take a look at this.
All of the spike protein-based gene-based vaccines, I think they all share, I'm not sure, I can only assume it was accidental, I think they all share a class risk effect. And that's because all of them are designed to go into your body, go into some cell somewhere, harness the cell's manufacturing machinery and make a piece of the pathogen, which is the spike, those things you see on the outside in the cartoons. But spike protein, we understand, is like a docking protein. This allows the virus to bind to a cell receptor on the outside of human cell. But it's not a passive binding protein. It's biologically active. It can prompt cells to stick together. It has so-called fusogenic properties. And it can also initiate blood coagulation. And so now, if you imagine a person received the vaccine, mRNA vaccine, it'll travel around their body, and to deposit differently in each person, it'll be like a typical pattern.
Is this why people are getting blood clots post-vaccine?
I'm explaining, yes. Yeah. So you would expect a normal bell curve, a distribution of where the vaccine goes. And some people, they may get little, very little will be picked up. Loads of people have the middling amount. But there'll be some people on the tail risk, the right-hand side. They might get a lot of the messenger might be picked up in a place where they're vulnerable, maybe in a blood vessel in their brain or in some branch point in their blood vessel. And now imagine you happen to be one of the unlucky people that took up a lot of that virus, the messenger RNA, and then yet again manufactured lots of spike protein in that spot because it'll be a normal distribution in every person. So if you're the outlier of the outlier, the one in a few thousand, you could end up producing a lot of spike protein in just the wrong place in your body. And if you had to be susceptible to formation of a blood clot, given what I just told you about properties of spike protein, I would predict this is what you'd expect. And sure enough, they found in Europe, I think several dozen cases of healthy, fit women, quite young, 20 to 50, who have died of cerebral vein sinus thrombosis. Mm-hmm. And even the regulator has now said, we believe it is causatively associated.
Now, that is exactly what Dr. Bhakti was pointing out, too. Remember, he was pleading with us to look this up. CVT, I believe. He was, look this up, right? This is what's going on. Here's the next part. Oh, shoot. I just stopped the screen share. Hold on. Here's the second part.
All of the spike protein-based, gene-based vaccines, I think they all share... I'm not sure. I can only assume it was accidental. I think they all share a class risk effect. And that's because all of them are designed to go into your body, go into some cell somewhere, harness the cell's manufacturing machinery and make a piece of the pathogen, which is the spike, those things you see on the outside in the cartoons. But spike protein, we understand, is like a docking protein. It allows the virus to bind to a cell receptor on the outside of human cell. But it's not a passive binding protein. It's biologically active. It can prompt cells to stick together. It has so-called fusogenic properties. And it can also initiate blood coagulation. And so now, if you imagine a person received the vaccine, mRNA vaccine, it'll travel around their body and it'll deposit differently in each person. It'll be like a typical pattern.
Is this why people are getting blood clots post-vaccine?
I'm explaining, yes. Yeah. So, you would expect a normal bell curve, a distribution of...
Maybe I played the same one twice. In any case, that's strange. Pretty sure I had those labeled correctly. Yeah, in any case, the point was very clear in the first clip, but I recommend that you watch both of those. In fact, if one of you guys in the mods could drop the links to both of those, I think you might have already done that. Thank you, Orwell. Both of those interviews are out of the park. They're so important. Now, I even saw some people commenting, you know, oh, that guy's a gatekeeper. Like, I hope that you guys are intelligent enough to recognize that even if that is true, there's still some value in these interviews. I disagree with that. I find both of them, at least in my instinct, in my opinion, to be people that believe what they're saying and are saying these things from a place of experience. And it's hard for people like, say, like Michael Yeen, for someone to come to the conclusion that everything he's ever worked on has all been completely wrong. Or, you know what I mean? Like, maybe he's just coming around to this stuff, or maybe we're wrong. I mean, the point is, what they're saying in here is factual information coming from experts that counter the main narrative, and that's valuable, right? So take a step back and recognize that even if that's true, you should still listen to what's happening and use it to your best interest, right? I mean, same thing we talk about with like a WikiLeaks discussion, right? It's my opinion that this is a valid situation that is being attacked by the government after all this time and after my research. But the point is, regardless, if you think this person is some kind of a government shill, It doesn't matter because at the end of the day, they're still going to use what's happening to him to come after independent media, right? So we should still be fighting for it not to happen, even if you believe that, right? So there's, you have to understand that there's nuance to all these things. It's never as simple as it seems. And even when people are misleading you or people are trying to, for instance, I always tell that you should be even checking out the mainstream media to make sure to see what they're trying to get out and try to push. You want to look at all the sides, right? That's the point. Now let's bring this back to my screen share here that I lost for a second. Hold on. Here we go. Okay. There we are. Moving forward, this is one last part on this first discussion, on this chunk before we jump into the person who died. This is an interesting point as well. I think I also saw this from Alex. Tinnitus and the coronavirus. Now, as I understand it, about a third of all tinnitus reports now in Bayer's are coming from COVID-19. specifically from the vaccine for administration for COVID-19, which is pretty interesting, don't you think? But nonetheless, what I find telling about this in general is what tinnitus is and what it seems to relate to. In any sense, I still ask that you, I recommend that you take the time to research and find out what Vaers is saying, because it's quite alarming, the stuff that they're pretending they can't find a link for. How many things can you continue just to be like, oh, we don't know for sure, right? If you have half the country saying we all got hurt from this and we're like, well, we can't prove it, what does it ultimately mean, right? But in any sense, tinnitus. In regard to blood clots, tinnitus can be a result of blood flow to a patient's ears is restricted or interrupted. A blood clot can not only cause ringing in the ears, but also heart attacks and strokes, right? So we know this. The point is it possible that what they're actually dealing with is something far more damaging? Yes. That's exactly what Dr. Bhakti was arguing, is that a lot of these are simply things that are being misrepresented as other things. Sort of like how people get all these terrible symptoms from the vaccine, and they are, or in any situation, they're misrepresenting it as COVID. A lot of places are doing that, which is pretty telling, don't you think? But in any case, I think it's pretty obvious here that what this, the information that we just went over is undeniable. I don't understand how we can ignore the science while they're telling us to trust the science. I mean, I do understand it. I say that for a point. I know I understand it because they don't want you to see that. I simply don't know how else it could be any other way, that they simply don't want you to recognize what that shows you, because there's an agenda here, guys. So here's an example of somebody who died. And there's interesting information that goes along with this story. AstraZeneca, head of R&D for oncology, dies at 61. Now, what it says here is that he's the Jose Baselga has died at the age of 61. Now, it says the statement did not give a cause of death, but Spanish newspaper, which, by the way, is strange how they're very close to the chest about these things these days. Like, no, we don't get to find any details about where or when or how. It's just like he died and he's just natural causes. Well, it says the Spanish newspaper, because that's where this, it's in Spain and generally where he's based out of, said that he died of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is a form of mad cow disease, as I understand it, a rare brain condition. Okay, that's just what you need to understand. That was the story. That's all we got. Some rare random thing, and he died, except the fact that it was strange that you can look back as recent as May 5th or November 5th, 2020, and you can watch this interview where he seems pretty damn okay. Now, it doesn't mean that he couldn't have got the reason. Realistically, done with my research, at least what they're saying he had, the if I pronounce it correctly again, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, takes about 6 months to a year to actually, you know, take its full course. So this was, at the very least, a rapid escalation or development of that disease. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but find it interesting. You know, this is him right here. Totally fine, not too far away. Doesn't mean it couldn't have happened, but just interesting to make that point. Now, that says mysterious brain disease causing hallucinations probed in Canada. Oh, actually, hold on, I'm jumping the gun. I wanted to talk about that at the end. I forgot to move that. Oh, that you guys already knew. I hinted that at the beginning. But in any case, before we get to that, shock as AstraZeneca's charismatic cancer R&D chief, Jose Baselga, dies. Says Baselga was a somewhat controversial choice for AstraZeneca when he took the helm of its oncology R&D, mainly because he had little corporate experience, but also because he resigned from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center after acknowledging he had failed to disclose payments from industry. So also recognize he's someone that seems to be able to kind of dance the line of what is allowed and what's not. I found that to be quite interesting. And what was it? There was something here, I guess. See, I feel like I refreshed some of these pages. It says here, a fellow of the American Association of Cancer Research, Baselga died of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, a rapidly progressive neurodegenerative disorder, according to Spanish newspaper. He was 61. I think I just forgot to get rid of some of my research here. It's probably what we're staring at here. Now, here's the point. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Classic Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease is a human prion disease, which some of you already know where this is going. Very important. It says classic is not, oh, well, that's interesting. So I've seen this reported in different ways, actually from other like mainstream outlets, but this is saying it's not related to mad cow disease. It's a distinct variant of another prion disease that is related to BSE. Well, in any case, the point was the prion disease relation, not the mad cow disease, prion's disease. That's according to the CDC. Here is a study, you know, science, that was conducted, again, at 2021, right there. Okay, this is recent. COVID-19 RNA-based vaccines and the risk of prion disease. So now, do we know for sure that what this person died from is something related to the vaccine? No, I don't know that. I don't know. Realistically, they're being so close to the chest on this that we can't even prove that he was actually vaccinated. I find it almost impossible that someone in his position wouldn't be, but the point is simply to argue that it's possible and recognize that I find it very telling that somebody in this situation died of something that is clearly being claimed it can be caused by the vaccine itself, as well as the fact that, since I already brought it up a second ago, we saw a mysterious brain disease causing hallucinations probed in Canada literally weeks after that happened to him. Interesting. And I'll get into that in a second, which seems to me to be the exact same thing. We're talking about, I'll try to just jump ahead and grab it real quick. I know it's in there. There it is. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. All right. Even calling it the same thing, right? At least the people that first thought. Now, the point before we get to that is to understand what this study is telling us. Now, first, let's look at the abstract. Development of new vaccine technology has been plagued with problems in the past, which, by the way, nobody wants to talk about, but people like RFK Jr. have called out and how they hurt people with these previous iterations. The current RNA-based SARS-CoV-2 vaccines were approved, which is not correct. Not correct. Even though they say approved with the emergency order, it's not approved. It is authorized for emergency use. That's it. There's no crossover between approved for emergency order. That is, and this is just an act, probably just stating this because they saying it because they've heard that. The point is that's not the appropriate stating, and they do that, so we blend those terms. But without extensive long-term safety testing, which I agree with. In this paper, the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine was evaluated for the potential to induce prion disease in vaccine recipients. The RNA sequence of the vaccine, as well as the spike protein target interaction, were analyzed. And again, that's important. This is what the correlation is between all this discussion. The spike protein, the lipid nanoparticles, it's all causing these problems in your body. And by the way, people like Dr. Bakhti, people like James Lyons-Weiler, they called this stuff out before this started. They had the science. They were waving it in front of everyone's faces. And all that happened was the mainstream media conducted a massive smear campaign to attack them in every possible way, delete them from their platforms, and make sure they weren't able to speak out because they care about your safety, right? It says they were analyzed for the potential to convert intracellular RNA binding proteins, TAR DNA binding proteins, and fused in sarcoma into their pathologic prion conformations. The results indicate that the vaccine RNA has specific sequences that may induce TDP43, which is relevant. Now, I'm thinking about something right now, and all of a sudden I'm thinking I might have missed something. I'll circle back. The only reason I'm pausing is because I feel like I just want to make sure I didn't skip something. Like maybe it was one of these articles we were jumping past. Doesn't look like it. All right, I'm going to keep going. It's probably in front of me, which is like what I tend to do. That's important, though. Specific sequences that may induce TDP43 and FUS, which was fused in sarcoma, to fold into the pathologic prion conformations. In the current analysis, a total of 16 UG tandem repeats were identified, and additional rich sequences were identified. Two sequences were found. Where was the point? Furthermore, the spike protein created by the translation of the vaccine RNA binds antigen converting enzyme 2, which is the ACE2, which, by the way, remember when Whitney talked about this way back in the beginning of all of this before, it's so interesting how ahead of the game she was on this discussion in a lot of different ways. A zinc-containing enzyme. This interaction has the potential to increase intracellular zinc. Oh, that's why. I'm funny. I know this is the next part. We're going to get into in the same article. That's what I was thinking about. How funny. We'll see what I mean. This interaction has the potential to increase intracellular zinc. Zinc ions have been shown. This is really interesting, by the way. Because remember, now I'm not saying that this necessarily translates to taking zinc in a general sense in regard to like your health is necessarily negative, but listen to what it says right here. Because saying interaction has the potential to increase intracellular zinc. Now, so zinc ions have been shown to cause the transformation of TDP43 to its pathological prion configuration. So possibly creating the prion disease we're talking about. So it's interesting. We're hearing all these discussions of zinc involved with treatments using big pharma drugs, by the way, which I've always been suspicious about. Interesting, right? The folding of TDP43 and FUS into their pathologic prion conformations is known to cause ALS, front temporal lobar degeneration, Alzheimer's disease, and other neurological degenerative disorders. The enclosed finding, as well as the additional potential risks, leads the author to believe that regulatory approval of the RNA-based vaccines for SARS-CoV-2 was premature and that the vaccine may cause much more harm than benefit. I love how that's perfect, right? The risks outweigh the benefit, right? Well, that's not what the science is finding. But let's jump down to the results. And just read these two paragraphs right here. Analysis of the Pfizer vaccine against COVID-19 identified two potential risk factors for introducing prion disease in humans. That's pretty clear, isn't it? The RNA sequence in the vaccine contains sequences believed to induce DDP43 and FUS to aggregate in their prion-based conformations, leading to the development of common neurodegenerative diseases. Neurodegenerative, just like what Dr. Pilevsky was saying. Right, just like plenty of people have warned us about. In particular, it has been shown that RNA sequences, Reed lists them off, have increased affinity to bind TDP43 and or FUS and may cause DDP43 or FUS to take their pathological configurations in the cytoplasm. In the current analysis of total 16 tandem repeats were identified, an additional UG-rich sequence were identified, two sequences were found. The spike protein encoded by the vaccine binds antigenicin converting enzyme 2, again ACE2, an enzyme which contains zinc molecules. The binding of spike protein to ACE2 has the potential to release the zinc molecule, an ion that causes DDP43 to assume its pathologic prion transformation. It's interesting, right? Now, this is something I would like to speak to somebody about, somebody who's an expert in this topic, to know whether the zinc we're discussing here is the same as what we would discuss in other locations, right? In any case, I find that to be quite interesting because, on this channel, I've never even gotten into discussions about things like ivermectin and, hydroxychloroquine. I think you should have the right to take whatever you want. If you think it's going to help you, then go take it. The fact is the government's the one that's basically mitigating that process. I find that to be very telling. Why aren't they, they're just completely banning vitamin D and vitamin C, all these different things that are clearly beneficial, but yet these things are still being used. It makes me very suspicious about it. Just something to think about. But the point is, other than zinc, is the prion disease, which it's very clear what they find, that these vaccines, in their opinion, can cause prion disease. Now, back to the other point. This is a guy who died from prion disease or a form of it. Okay, so is there a question to be asked? Should we ask, did he get the vaccine and did he die from that? Yes, based on what's going on, we have every reason in the world to ask that question because Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease is prion disease. Now, back to this point. Mysterious brain disease causing hallucinations, right? So this guy dies of something that's a prion disease, right? And this is months before. I mean, actually, it seems like this study is reasonably close to when this happened or like months before. So he dies. This is already when this is being administered, right? Then within less than a few, let's make sure it's exact. This is reported on March 21st. So let's just give it a couple day barrier. I was looking at it earlier, but it doesn't list the exact day right there. But so then jumping forward to March 31st, so a week later, we have a report of a mysterious brain. So what's actually going on? Is the vaccine continue to be administered? Yes. Is that we know that's what caused it? No. But why aren't we asking these questions? Because we know the science shows it's possible because they're not trusting the science. They're trusting the dogma, the narrative, the government. It says more than 40 people in Canada have reportedly contracted a mysterious brain illness with symptoms resembling those in a rare and fatal illness, including memory loss, hallucinations, and muscle atrophy. What do you know? It's the exact same thing we're hearing in every other part of this discussion. Officials alerted doctors to the New Brunswick province this month that they were monitoring a cluster of 43 cases of a neurological disease with unknown cause. All right, so what's changed? Couldn't be the vaccine, so we won't even consider that, right? That's the first thing they do. Residents first learned of the probe last week after a leaked memo, so they didn't want you to see it, from the local public health agency asked doctors to be on the lookout for symptoms similar to Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, a fatal brain disease caused. Now, why would they do that? Why would they quietly put a memo out that says, everybody be on the lookout for this? And why would they not want you to see that? Isn't that interesting? But then guess what? They follow up. By the way, it says a fatal brain disease caused by misinformed proteins known as prions. Misinformed proteins known as prions. What do you know? Quote, we are collaborating with different national groups and experts. However, no clear cause has been identified at this time. Right? They might as well just stamp that on everything that happens. We don't know for sure. Risks outweigh the benefits. It's safe and effective. Over and over and over. Despite none of that being true. Some of the symptoms, including memory loss, vision problems, and abnormal movements, triggered with an alert with Canada's Crutchfield-Jacobs Surveillance Network. Memory loss, vision problems, abnormal movements, you know, things that are like Bell's palsy, all these different things that could have been something else. But despite the initial similarities, guess what? Screening produced no confirmed cases of Crutchfield-Jacobs disease. Maybe because it's not. Maybe because it's something being induced by a vaccine causing a prions disease. Different. But the point nonetheless is that a leaked memo was like, hey, everybody be on the lookout for this thing. Why would they do that? Why would they do that in the middle of a pandemic unless they know something? Quote, or not quote, their symptoms could also be diagnosed as anxiety or depression. They actually argue that, right? But it says, but then he noted, but over 18 to 36 months, they began developing cognitive decline, muscle wasting, drooling, and teeth chattering. Yeah, clearly they're just depressed, right? They are so desperate to try to frame these things as anything else. A number of them also began experiencing scary hallucinations, including the feeling of insects crawling on their skin. Yes, I'm going to talk about that in a second. To rule out other possible causes like dementia, neurodegenerative disease, autoimmune disorders, and possible infections, which all these things could be interconnected, Mero's team conducts an extensive study of the patient's history, as well as a battery of tests, including brain scans, metabolic toxicity tests. Okay, none of this stuff is going to lead, well, some of it might lead back to a conclusion that it might be the vaccine, but none of this stuff is ultimate. I mean, even as these experts have said in the past, in most of these cases, we won't really know for the fact that we know there's nothing else different in these people's lives is one of the first things we should look at. But when you're just doing tests based on things you think it might be, as opposed to looking at the correlation first and leading, you know, taking the clues in front of you and going that direction, you're going to find what you're looking for. Quote, we have not seen over the past 20 plus years a cluster of diagnosis-resistant neurological disease like this one. That's why they were worried about it, because something's going on. It's not just the, like, they, in this very article, they try to make it out to be, well, there's cases here and there. No, because not in 20 years have they seen something like this, because something's going on. And that's why the leaked memo was like, hey, is that happening over there? You guys keep an eye out for that, because they know something's weird, because they're head of R&D just died from the same thing. And whether that's connected to the vaccine is up for you to decide. But clearly there's something fishy going on, in my opinion. Now, hallucinations, things crawling on your skin is a weird thing to see from this. So it led to me finding this. 2018, prion-based nanomaterials and their emerging applications. What do you know? It's almost like this is all part of some big grand order, huh? So it says protein misfolding and aggregation into highly ordered fibrillary structures have been traditionally associated with pathological processes. Over the last decades, these fibrillary structures have inspired the design of new nanomaterials with intriguing applications in biomedicine and nanotechnology, such as tissue engineering, drug delivery, adhesive materials, biodegradable nanocomposites, nanowires, or biosensors. Of course, drug delivery. Don't you find that it being a common correlation between these discussions? Prion and prion-like proteins, which are considered a subclass of amyloids, are becoming ideal candidates for the new design of new and turnable nanomaterials. What do you know? As always, these are just data points that I want you to look into further, to research, to understand. This last little bulk is just correlation. Hopefully you'll look into it further. The first part was nothing of the kind. First part is, in my opinion, absolutely sound. This is just something I think we should not be afraid to ask, because there's too many things pointing in the same direction. Now, wrapping up this vaccine part, I think, before the next last part. Well, no, actually, I think this is all about to finish up here. I want to make up points about India. They started rolling out their own vaccine mid-January. It has been suggested that 50% of population were probably immune. Vaccines can produce variants. The point here is that it's interesting to find out that India, majority of Indians, had natural immunity. This is on January 2021. Vaccinating the entire population could cause great harm. What are we seeing right now? Great harm. And what are they having? They're telling us it's all a bunch of COVID-19. Well, what are these vaccines can cause? Symptoms that look just like COVID-19. So maybe it's because these people didn't need this thing and they pushed it on them anyway, because that's what they usually do in India, and everything's going wrong. because of all the things we just talked about, right? Here, this is a British medical journal, India at the center of global vaccine manufacturing. It says Covishield, which by the way is AstraZeneca. So let's not be confused about the clear crossover here that AstraZeneca, blood clots, and the whole thing is being pushed on all these people. Guess what? It says right here, as of January 19th, understand, 1.5 million people had already been vaccinated with AstraZeneca or the other one, which is their local one. Although, which by the way, I think, if I understand it, a huge majority of this, or at least most, I don't want to misquote the exact, I know that a large portion of people in that country use the one, which is called Covishield, which is basically AstraZeneca. It says 1.5 million people have been vaccinated, although there were initial reports of skepticism among medical workers. Guess what? Even in India, where they forced this on so many people, less than 30%, that's less than in this country, less than 30% of their healthcare workers took the vaccine. Isn't that incredible? And they want us to think this is all good, and their own healthcare workers are like, screw that. Why? Because they know more than we do. They're inside, they see these things, they're watching people take this thing. They're saying, screw that. I don't know why we don't understand what that shows us. The point is, if 1.5 million people in January can be vaccinated, why are they now pushing vaccines again? They're trying to push this massive thing again. The reality, guys, is this is not helping people. As I said, great. And this is U.S. to send vaccine materials and other supplies to hard India. So giving vaccines? Great. So India studies find that 75% of all deaths and severe adverse events are occurring within 3 days of the COVID vaccine, and the U.S. government rushes to help them get more COVID vaccines. Perfect. Because that makes sense. Here's the show I did if you're interested in finding the links and the studies to that. It's all listed below, just like everyone I do, where you can find all the information. I believe India should be under the vaccine topic. There you go. I'll just pull this up since we're talking about it really quickly. But I recommend if you want the in-depth discussion, please go through this other show and watch it. 180 deaths after COVID jabs till March 31st, 75 within 3 days. And if you read through it, the point is they make it clear that this is not even just the deaths, but also all the adverse events, the vast majority of them anyway. I don't want to waste time trying to find it. I had it all highlighted before, but this is important to understand. And this is the information they don't want you to see. As well, I mean, and it started with the idea that they were reviewing all these hundreds of serious post-adverse events. All this is happening within days of the vaccine. They don't want you to see this stuff, guys. So if they were already all vaccinated and most of them had immunity, why is this even happening this way? I think there's much more happening than we think. But as Taylor points out, quote, no one is safe from virus until each of us is. That's what this is saying down here. Expressing my sincere solidarity with India in the current COVID situation. No one is safe until each of us is safe. Either you're with us or you're against us, right? It's the same old ultimatums, right? Absolutes. Well, India seems to be having a problem, I would argue, because of what's being pushed on them. That's my opinion. But in any case, as she points out, since when do we ever apply that logic to any other virus? Do they tell us this during the flu season? This thinking is so twisted, right? The point is, it's meant to be, well, we're always going to be here until we make sure that literally no one is hurt from this, which will never, ever, ever happen. It's the same equivalent of saying that we're going to continue until we annihilate terrorism, right? You're never going to remove terrorism because, in fact, you're the one creating most of it, but that's a different point. You can't to argue that you're going to remove terror from the world is childish. What does that even mean to remove terror? It's arbitrary. That's the same idea. They want this to continue. They want it to continue under the guise of doing what you think is right. People are literally arguing that not a single person can die from COVID. And until that happens, we're all going to stay here. That is the point because they're desperately holding on to power. Pharmaceutical industry dispatches an army of lobbyists to block generic COVID vaccines. Why? Right? Well, how does that make sense? Aren't they in this to save you? Isn't the point about having as many things as possible to help you and save you and make you healthy? No, because it's not about your health. If these people were fighting for your health, then it would be as many as possible that are as good as possible as long as they're safe. Even though none of those are safety, different discussion, none of those are safety. The point is, they're blocking other generics because they know that they'll be cheaper. They know that people will use them and that will take away from their bottom line, which is all that matters. As well, if you want to get into the nefarious side of this, maybe not have the same things that they want you to take in theirs, whatever that would be. any case, the fact that they're blocking this, stopping you from having more things that might help you, or generics that could be given to other locations around the world to have access. Again, trust me, I'm not saying that they should want the thing. I'm arguing from their narrative. This is what everyone should need, and we're all about equity, blah, blah, blah. That's not what this looks like, does it? It's not about equity. It's not about health or safety. It's about whatever they're trying to accomplish and their bottom line. It's never been more clear, guys. And as laughing, the man who last points out, the same people who brought you the Election Integrity Partnership brings you the Virality Project, a coalition of research entities focused on supporting real-time information exchange between the research community, public health officials, government agencies, civil society organizations, and social media platforms. So they're going to become the barrier between you and the research data. So I wonder if that means you're only going to get to see the ones you want you to see, or is it going to mean that they, you know, only approve certain ones and only then those will be the real science? Right? This is another choke point. This is going to be used. Someone says it's playing with my sound. Oh, you know what it looks like? Of course it is. Of course the stream is being throttled right now, like it seems to be doing, even though my stream, my internet on my end is unbelievable. Guys, you hear me. It's the connection. I know, guys. I'm just going to keep going. Okay. Focused on supporting real-time information. They're going to get between you guys. Very frustrating to me that this happens, guys. It's infuriating because, specifically because, there's nothing I can do about this, right? Everyone's commenting about it. I know. There's literally nothing I can do because my speed is actually quite solid. I'm just double checking that right now. But as it's waiting, the point is that this group is essentially going to be a real gatekeeper, right? A real gatekeeper. This is going to be the group that gets between you. I'll make sure I put it back up. Okay, good. The group that gets between you and the information. Everyone's saying it's back to normal now. Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm looking at my speed. It's crazy. So what's frustrating is that I don't know if this is StreamYard messing with me. I don't know if this is somebody messing with me from like my cable company level, or maybe that I'm just crazy and there's just something going on. All of those are possible. In any sense, it happens all the time and there's nothing I can do about it, which is great. But this group becoming the barrier between you and research is the logical conclusion of what they've been saying, right? They don't want you to be able to look at the science like we're showing you today, because then you'll know that they're not trusting the science, right? They'll know that you're telling them what they want you to think the science is. It says, our objective is to detect, analyze, and respond to incidents of COVID-19 vaccine disinformation, which they would argue this whole thing is, across online ecosystems, and ultimately mitigate the impact of narratives, which could otherwise undermine the public's confidence in the safety of these processes in the United States. So you make sure you understand what it says right there. Right? So it says ultimately mitigate the impact of narratives, not necessarily false or true, but just narratives, which could otherwise undermine the public's confidence in the safety. So what if these things aren't safe? That doesn't matter. Their job is to mitigate the narratives, which would undermine public's confidence in the safety, regardless of whether they're safe or not. Right? You may not want to take it that way if you trust these people, but recognize that's what they mean, because that's what they're doing now. We've already caught them in 1,000 lies around this whole thing. We're already watching these side effects. They're doing studies within the supposed study, or even not, well, see, they don't even think about it that way. They're doing studies now while these normies out there believe it's approved, and they're doing studies for things while they're doing that. How do you possibly rationalize that? These things are not fully tested. They're not clearly safe, and yet they're pretending they are. It's the same idea. It's all about vaccine hesitancy, whether or not it's justified. Same thing here. They're going to mitigate the impact of narratives that will undermine people's confidence in the vaccine industry, regardless of whether they're justified. And as he points out, don't forget, the same people that brought you the Election Integrity Project, which is a group that Whitney's pointed out is obscenely biased. And it's just, it is the job of them is to, I mean, I recommend you get into it for yourself and research the articles. I'll have to write that down so I can grab that article for you. But it's important to understand that this is just one more choke point. It's one more way that they can control your narrative, your perception, and the flow of information. Oh, but don't worry though, because Moderna is going to have their third vaccine for you by this fall. you know, the third vaccine was not supposed to happen. That's going to continue because the CEO told you that it's going to be every 6 months for the rest of your life. And you're going to have to keep wearing a mask because that's the point. Now, I had a whole mask discussion today that I'm not going to get into because I just wouldn't want this to be incredibly long. So we're under 2 hours, which is good for us. But the point was that they're already telling you that masks are going to be forever. There's people right now that are saying there's no reason we should ever stop using masks. They should be on our faces forever. We're talking scientists in the government are telling you that right now and saying that this is your future. As I've always been saying, if you knew this was never going to end, would you still continue to promote it, to support it, to fight for it? On that fight, for Jason's note there, I've actually done a great interview with Ice Age Farmer. Already had him on the show. You might have missed that because I think it might have been during the time when it wasn't on YouTube. But the point is, in regard to that, he's done some fantastic work around the food infrastructure discussion. I recommend you check that out. I just saw that in the comment that felt like pointing that out. But to finish off, global research points out nobody is dying from vitamin C and vitamin D, zinc supplements, or other natural remedies. That's worth looking into, in my opinion, just because of that article that science said. But in any case, the point is the same. And so nobody's dying from vitamin C and vitamin D. And yet if one promotes these remedies, age-old remedies, they're now treated as criminals. How do we not see what that shows us about where we are right now? Incredible. But thank you for being here today, guys. I appreciate your time and your interest and your critical thinking. That's what it's all about. Applying critical thinking to anything that you look at, applying just, you know, having some discernment, taking, being able to look at something, even from a source you trust, including from, you know, let's say you trust this show, listening to what I'm saying and going, okay, I got to look into that because that sounds, I don't know if that's true. Like, you shouldn't just take it at face value because I'm saying it or anybody is saying it. Question everything is not just a tagline. Question everything, guys, everything, including me. It's never been more clear that we need to be doing that. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.